Okay, Shira, this Shira, I think, is going to be up to your liking, and I don't mean to pick on you, because we're doing something literary, and I don't exactly know what to do with it, so it'll be a matter for discussion and thought, okay? So we're going to pick up, we're going to do the if you were building a religion, what would be the first thing that you would base it upon? What would be the ideal based upon which you would start your nationality, if you wanted to start a new country? Right, you would go to Har Sinai, but we're not starting in Har Sinai. The nation of Am Yisrael is created in Mitzrayim. They're created from the Geula, from the Exodus. They're established as a nation. So you have like one opportunity to establish the foundation, the basis upon which the nation will be established, will be created. So, and that is in one fell swoop, in one act, in the act of Yitziat Mitzrayim, in the act of Makat Bechorot, and the corresponding Exodus. This will be the forming, founding experience that shapes us to this very day. You know, the tefillin I put on this morning, the parsha ends, right? The tefillin that I put on by you, the totafot ben inecha, right? The parshat bo ends exactly that. Lahaya leot ayadcha leot benecha ki bechozek yad otzianu Hashem mimitzrayim. To this very day, how much of what we do is Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim? Shabbat, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. Tefillin, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. There's a bunch of other ones that I'm not thinking of right now. So all of the Chagim, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. Over and over and over again. This is the founding core experience which has shaped us. So now we're going to, if you want to shape it, so of course the Ribono Shel Olam is going to shape it. How does God shape the experience? How are we, by telling us how to experience this night, by forcing us to experience this night in a specific way. So I want to focus on, everybody understand what I'm saying? I mean, this is going to be the experience that's going to make us. We're going to talk about this, not just for the rest of our lives, our specific lives, but our national lives, our national experience. It's going to be who we are. So how does the Torah subtly, I think, in ways that I didn't offer, you don't always notice, but explicitly, subtly and explicitly at the same time, uses the text and the mitzvot in order to shape our experience in Yetziat Mitzrayim. And we're going to see this through the commandment of Korban Pesach, as we all know, right? How do we experience Yetziat Mitzrayim? We experience Yetziat Mitzrayim through the bringing of the Korban Pesach, the offering of the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach was the prism through which we then had this, which only makes our lack of Korban Pesach now that much more pronounced. It was supposed to be reenacted year in and year out. And the fact that we don't reenact it means that we're missing something. So what are we missing? That's an interesting question, as we shall soon discuss. Okay? Comments? Nothing yet? Nothing yet. Okay.
I was thinking of Sefer Yosha when they came and they passed over the Yeridim and they did the Korban Pesach.
Correct.
They did the Brit Milah.
Oh, it's so interesting that you mentioned Brit Milah. So interesting that you mentioned Brit Milah. We're going to see how fundamental is Brit Milah as well. So we're going to do Perek Yud Bet today. We're going to actually do the whole Perek. It's huge. We're going to do pieces of it because I want to focus on something that I noticed reading through it. And I'm sure you've noticed it as well, but I want to point it out to you because sometimes it's so superfluous that it just jumps out at you. Perek Yud Bet and Parshat Bo. Okay? We all know the story, but let's see how it's described. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aharon ve'eretz Mitzrayim. More God said, Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt. Today, I'm going to read a little more quickly than I usually do, and then stop at certain points. Chodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadashim, rishon hu lachem lechodshei hashana. So I will point out, as we have pointed out before, the first mitzvah in the Torah is a chodesh hazeh lachem, explicit, right? The mitzvah of Jewish time, of establishing a Jewish calendar. I'll just point out, for those of you living in Israel, who are listening together with us today, you will notice that the state of Israel just changed the cutoff times for the kids that determines their age.
Really?
Yes. Okay. It went from the Jewish calendar to the secular calendar, to the Loazi calendar.
December?
It's the 1st of January, I think it is. Yeah. So it used to be Aleph Teved, and the parents didn't know. So only those people who are in the religious circles are wringing their hands. Everybody else is happy because they know when January 1st is. But you will notice that until now, all official communication in the Mizrach was, you know, Lamed Tevet, and in parentheses it would tell you what the Loazi is. So just not a good thing. Not a good thing. We should... I'm going a little backwards. But, I would say that if I were to ask you today, what's today's Hebrew date? Anybody know? Omer Shel Chodesh. So what's the Hebrew date? What's today's English date?
December 31st.
See, with the fact that we know it's December 31st says much more about us than what we don't really know what the Hebrew date is exactly. What? You're figuring it out. Nice, right. I can figure it out too, because Rosh Chodesh is on. Rosh Chodesh is on Thursday. Thursday. One day of Rosh Chodesh? Right. Tomorrow, not that's what she meant. Right. Yeah, so, but isn't it interesting? New Year, same? Whatever. Okay. And that's our problem too, because it's a Chodesh HaZalachem. We should know, we're supposed to know what the Hebrew date is.
So we should
you know the other way.
Rosh Chodesh Elul and not September.
Yeah, you tell that to the schools. We also know that you can write your check legally, you can write your check with the Hebrew date.
My kids would tell you what the Hebrew date is today. They've seen it in English.
Would they?
Yes.
Tachya! Tachya!
What
tarich hayom? No. He doesn't know either one. What?
There you go.
Kavzayin? Ephema. Okay. So that's exactly the point. You know, you can write a check in Israel at Hebrew day. What's the English date? What's the English date? That's my point. Why don't you write it in English, the Hebrew day? Fair enough. We continue. Pasuk Gimel. Debru, but that's a mitzvah we're talking about, the idea of a Jewish time. That's actually the fundamental mitzvah. Before you can do anything, you have to know what your date is. So the first thing that God establishes for the Jewish people is, you don't go by their time. You know, by the third year of Imhotep the fourth, or whatever it is. You go by your time. We establish a new calendar. Fine.
In matters of science, they go by our time. Like when they were launching the Apollo, and they were calculating how far it was to the moon, it was in nanoseconds of the Jewish calculation.
Oh, I'm not saying the calculation. By the way, we're not supposed to have a calculation. The reason we have a calculation is, again, because it's a Churban Beit HaMikdash. Right? The reason, what's it supposed to be, everybody knows, it's Edut in the Beit HaMikdash. You're not supposed to know that this month Rosh Chodesh is Thursday.
So
this month Rosh Chodesh is not Thursday. This month Rosh Chodesh is? No. To be determined. Right. So when you're making your flights for Pesach, right, what day should it be? Should it be the Monday, the Tuesday, the Wednesday?
But it won't be relevant.
Whatever, we'll let you know a couple days before. You know what I'm saying? You know approximately when it's going to be, but that's a very specific idea that there's no set time, that we set the time.
So when they built the third base of Mikdash,
yes.
Go back to that?
Absolutely. I mean, you'll know. You'll know by and large. They'll know exactly when they're going to come, when they should come. But if for whatever reason they don't come, that's not the date. What? No, but everybody has their smartphone, so it's very simple because your phone will automatically update you and tell you what date it is. Yeah.
Which is really the other calendar, and now that sort of Amistral is under this new religion and they're kind of following God and not the Egyptian law, they're basically now doing their calendar based on their moon and not what was representing their God.
Right.
So it's a shift away also from Egyptian theology.
Very nice. There's also a sense of Chodesh also refers to the idea of Chadash, of newness. That each month is an idea of renewal. You know, what the day they call before Yom Kippur, before Rosh Chodesh is called as Yom Kippur Katan. You ever heard that? There's an idea of Yom Kippur Katan right before Rosh Chodesh because it's the idea of starting something new, or beginning anew. Anyway, Dabruel, you're absolutely correct. Dabruel called it up in Israel Lemor Be'asor LaChodesh Hazeh on the 10th of this month, the new month that we just made up. V'ikchu lahem ish sela beit avot sela bayit. Each of you should take ish, a man, seh, a sheep, lebeit avot, beit avot,
household,
selabait. Good. Okay. What are you looking at? Why are you giving me funny look?
I'm saying because the sheep is also fits in with my last thought. Sheep and the son were both.
I know that's true. Do we have a record of there being Egypt? The Midrash says it. Did they really worship the sheep? Is there a record independently that they worship the sheep? They worship the Pharaoh. They worship the Nile. Where do we see that they worship the sheep?
Well, the Jews say we want to live in Goshen because we don't want to be an abomination to you because we're shepherds.
That being a shepherd... Oh, maybe. Okay. Fair enough. Is there records of them worshiping sheep? Is such a record? I don't know. I'm just thinking it's so interesting. We know that they slaughtered their sheep. It's very. It's just. I think that there was an idea of. There was an idea of the deity, but I don't think they worshiped. They bowed down to sheep in that way. I'm not entirely sure. You don't, what? Look into it. Okay, anybody got a Wikipedia or something? But I'm interested in celibate avot, celibate. What does that mean? Celibate avot, celibate. Is it bait avot or celibate? Who should take the sheep? Is it per household or per house?
So man says a father's house.
Yeah.
In a household.
Which one is it?
Maybe both.
I should take two sheep? No, clearly not take two sheep. It's one sheep. Everybody understand? And we are immediately confronted with this problem.
Well, it's weird. It says, Yekru lahem ish.
Ish?
Se.
Se lebeit avot.
What does
right?
that mean, ish and then se?
Each man, I guess. Each person.
Oh, ish.
Why ish? Good question. How does it translate? Should take, yekru lahem, they should take for them, ish.
On the 10th of this month, they.
Thank you.
Shall take
okay.
themselves, each man,
a lamb kid, the beit avot,
for a father's house, a lamb kid for each household.
Which one is it? A lamb for the father's house or a lamb for each household? By the way, it says household.
And each man.
What?
Is it both?
Isn't that sound weird? Now that we read it, sounds very strange. Is it beit avot? You have two. I'm going to read it in two possible ways. It could be celibate avot or celibate. Or, okay, how do we solve this problem? Okay, says Rashi. Rashi asks this question. Rashi always asks the question. Rashi never asks non-literary questions, just so you know. Rashi says, celibate avot lemishpacha achat, for each family. Hare shayu merubim, what if there were too many? Yachol se echad lekulam. Okay, what if there's too many in the whole household? Meaning a household is like the Arab's household. They would have in the whole, like, what's a house? It's like an apartment building. When they have another kid get married, what do? Build another floor. So, like, but how many people? What if it's not enough? So then it says, Tamud lomar selabait. So you could either have one seh for each whole household, apartment building.
If it's small enough.
Or, if it's small enough, or a selabait, or you can add on a seh for each house. Selabait.
Each family.
Okay. What's another interpretation of that you are that you all know? Ish celibate avot, celibate. There's another way of interpreting. By the way, do you like Rashi's interpretation? Either or?
No.
One or the other?
Why does it say ish then? You don't need ish then.
Well, either way, you don't need ish.
Right.
Right?
That's true.
Everybody
but
understand?
It's like focusing on an individual, so why?
I don't know. Okay. Anybody?
Head of the household.
Head of the household. Then ish doesn't bother me as much. Interesting. Celibate avot, but I'm stuck on the celibate avot, celibate. So Rashi says it's either one or the other. Okay?
Depending on the size of the family.
Fine, but you're okay with that?
Need.
Why don't you say celibate? Then you would think each
is
family
it a monetary
needs one.
Thing?
Like if your household can only afford a little bit versus. Yeah.
And like tzedakah is proportional to what you earn. Is it similar to that?
No. The rule is, it's actually very, very specific. The rule is everyone has to eat. Okay? Everyone has to eat. You have to have enough for everyone to have some, but you can't have too much. How do I know you can't have too much? You have to finish it by morning, and there's an isur d'oraita of lo totiru, we're going to see. Don't leave over. So you have to sort of calculate, as we'll soon see. I'm going to read you a different interpretation of celibate. I'm going to read you the midrash, and then you'll see it. Maybe we read celibate a little bit differently. Okay, so what does it mean? Right. Why did they take it on the 14th? Everybody know why they took it on the 14th? On the 10th? On the 10th?
On the 10th.
What's that?
It's the same as when they crossed the Yarden. It's when they
okay.
This is about, you might have said this when I was in there, I'm really sorry. And maybe it's totally irrelevant. It's celibate of hope. Is it somehow like recalling Sput of
hope? Oh! So nice. I'm going to read you one midrash. So the midrash asks, why the 10th? Says the midrash, Ma tam ena pesach nishchat ela ayud dalid? Hayu Yisrael koshlim haksavim vaizim shoshayimim. Why'd they take the kesev and the eiz? Why'd they take it, 3 days before? Kishem she'asa Avraham, they didn't shecht it until that night. Kishem she'asa Avraham avinu, what did our God say? Kachna et bincha. Right? Kachna, please take your son. Okay? Kashar lo hakadosh baruch hu et ha'ayil me'otash sha'ah. So the Midrash says, remember that Abraham didn't eventually take his son. He didn't slaughter his son. What did he slaughter? An ayil. Where was the ram? He was stuck in the thicket, in the svach. So the Midrash says, God tied that, when God said to him, Abraham, I want you to take your son, at that moment, God took an ayil and got him stuck in the thicket. That time. How long did Abraham take to get to Haran Moriah? From the time that Abraham Avinu was commanded, how long did it take him to get to Haran Moriah? Anybody know? Minitacher Abraham Shlosha Yamin. 3 days. Shneamar Bayom HaShlishi, because it says explicitly on the third day. So, it's interesting. Abraham nitacher, according to the Midrash. Why was Abraham delayed? What does that mean, that the Satan? What does that mean Abraham was delayed? Now, but technically, we know why was he really delayed. Why was he really delayed? Why was he really delayed? Why did it take 3 days? He was in Be'er Sheva. He had to walk from Be'er Sheva to Haran Moriah. It takes 3 days. But according to the Midrash, Tammy's correct. Why did it take 3 days?
He didn't want to do it.
He wasn't ready. The Satan is his doubt, is his unwillingness. So it says, therefore, the Fikach Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Hakdimu Atem. You prepare yourselves to early 3 days. It's like this confusing mix of a tikkun for Abraham and a remembrance of Abraham's willingness. So you have to take the ayil 3 days early. That's one answer that the Midrash says, why 3 days early? Why on the 10th do you take the ayil 3 days early? We're going to see two more. Another answer. Davarach, and this is going to answer our question. What does it mean, celebrate avot? Halo ein yafeh elam midirot ba'at amret ba'asor. Like the sheep. Where are sheep kept? Where do we keep sheep? No. Where do you don't keep your small animals in the fields. Where do you keep them? In the pen. And where are we supposed to... Where did they take them? Where did they put them? What did they do with the sheep? They tie them up to the... Come on, everybody. We all read the Haggadahs. Where did they tie them? Nobody knows?
They put them in the backyard.
Shurim mitotehem shel Yisrael. You never heard that they tie them to the bedposts? Nobody ever heard that?
Yes.
Right? It's in some like picture book that you get with you read with your kids. Mm. Right? So they tie them to their beds. Why'd they tie them to their beds?
So no one would steal them.
What?
No one would steal them.
No one would steal them? If I told you, listen, you have to have
with
a sheep. You have to have a sheep. Do me a favor. You have to have a sheep and take the sheep and make sure that it's ready. Tammy, where would you keep your sheep?
If you didn't want it to be damaged.
Where would you keep him?
Next to me.
You, really? You would put the sheep in your bed?
Well, I think about my hunt.
Your hunt. Isn't he a sheepdog?
He sleeps in my room. In his little bed.
You and I are very different. Okay.
Well, they have to be perfect, right? So
yes.
Damage.
Where would I keep my sheep? I'd tie him up to a stick in the back of the house and everybody would be fine. You know what I'm saying? Would you bring him inside?
You'd have a nice manicure.
Don't ask me.
Okay. You would. I don't want to ask you, okay? But if you heard this midrash, that they tied them to their... You never heard that midrash? They tied them to their bedposts? I've heard that midrash. Okay? Vayu mitzriim nichnesim v'ro'im otam. The Egyptians would enter their houses and see this. V'nafsham parachat me'alehem. And their souls left them. They were disgusted by this. So some say, why are they disgusted? He adds on, because it was their deity. And they would show that they were going to slaughter their deity. Why would that matter if they're inside the house or outside the house? So here, let me show you how I'm reading the pasuk. V'ikulem ish sele beit avot. Each household should take a sheep for its household, sele bayit, and bring the sheep into the house. Do you understand? It's not a this or that. And I think this is how the Midrash is reading it. Take the sele beit avot and bring it into the house. And this is reflected in the way the Midrash is explaining what they actually did. They took this seh and they brought it into the house. Okay, and I think that the Egyptians were reviled by the fact that you would bring a barn animal into your house. They would be reviled by the dog in the house too. In fact, anybody more than 100 years ago would be reviled by bringing a dog into the house. Just... Yeah, anyway. Okay. Sorry for you pet owners, but anyway. Why would the Egyptians be reviled? Because I just have this sense that there was a certain order, a certain place. I think the idea of being a shepherd, being an ish mikneh, itself was an abomination. Because people weren't supposed to deal with animals. You would be a person of the fields, a person of the land. And you used animals in such a way. But a person who spent all their time with animals, an ish mikneh, I think that they had a revulsion to it in a different kind of way, not just a sense of idolatry. That's the sense that I get. I'm totally throwing this out. I'm basing this on nothing that I know. But
it's totally the opposite in Judaism. You know, that order, David Amelik, you know, it's a very respectful, introspective job.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely. In a sense of caring. In a sense of...
And connection with Hashem, with all that spectacle, meditation. I don't know. Go out into
it. It's so fascinating in society... It's what's fascinating in society is that in our society today, we do bring animals into our house, but not the animals that we eat, not the animals that we use. The animals that we use, we separate, meaning it's almost interesting that the animals that we love, we treat them like people. But the animals that we use, we create a total separation between ourselves and them. They're not in our lives. They don't live in our backyard. We don't keep chickens, most people, the vast majority of people.
Too.
What? Your neighbors do?
Yeah, they've got chickens.
In the house?
Sheep?
No, in the pen outside.
Right, outside.
Right.
Wrapped by the patio. They eat the eggs.
Yeah, good for them. It's an interesting dichotomy, but in our society, even if you think about even the animals that we keep, the milk cows that we keep or the cows, we don't even let them graze. We don't let, you know what I'm saying? We keep them like stock. We keep them like product. No, it's around the world. Absolutely not. All around the world. If you had to.
What?
In Europe, there are the animals all over the place. Yeah.
Wait, why did they bring you into the house?
Those aren't dairy cows.
And she got
her. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's just a fascinating. I get the sense that the. One of the things that was supposed to revile or shock the Egyptians was the idea of Seh L'Bayit. Seh doesn't belong in the Bayit. And that's why we specifically are bringing the Seh in the Bayit. And then what are we going to do with the Seh in the Bayit? We'll tell you what we're going to do. Okay? And if the house is too small, miyot miseh, to have one Seh, v'lakachu u'shchino hakarov el beito b'michsat nefashot, ish defi achlo tachosu alasi. You have to cover the say. You have to cover. You have to have enough people. So if the house is not enough, what do you do?
Share it with your neighbor.
Ushchino, which neighbor?
Next door
neighbor. So fascinating. Hakarov el beito.
I'm assuming the next door neighbor was not Egyptian.
So the Gemara says. The Gemara says. What if the next neighbor was Egyptian? He was Egyptian. So what does it say?
Skip over him.
Skip over him. Right. You go to the next door neighbor who's closest to you. Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
B'michsat nefashot. It's interesting, they lived together.
What?
They didn't have a shtetl.
There was no shtetl, absolutely not. They were spread out among the Egyptians. They were the slaves of the Egyptians. Some lived in Goshen, but I think that it's clear that the Jews lived spread out. They were serving the Egyptians. They were in the back of the house or their own sub-house in the neighborhood. Okay, set tamim zachar. What I've done, I just want to point out, what I've done is I started underlining the word bayit in this parak. Okay, so how many times have we seen the word bayit so far in this parak? I'll just tell you. We've seen it, it starts in Pasuk Gimel, Seh lebeit avot, seh lebayit, v'imimat habayit miyot miseh, hakarov el beito b'mirsat nefashot. So four times I've seen it in two psukim.
Yeah.
Okay, and what I'm trying to show, and this is what I want to share with you, is this theme of bayit, of the house, we'll see, appears over and over and over again in this chapter about Korban Pesach. Okay, which clearly is trying to communicate something to us, and it's something I obviously believe is the notion, the fundamental value that the Ribbono Shel Olam is communicating to us in the establishment of the Jewish people is this critical value of bayit, that it becomes the foundation, the haven through which Judaism is established. Meaning, if you were establishing a nation, you would think the first thing you establish are. Like our logic would say, to create institutions, to create, you know, leadership positions, to create a court, to create a legislature. And in Judaism, the first thing we see are none of these things. Moshe Rabbeinu was a leader, but even Moshe Rabbeinu, he himself was in a bayit. You know, the foundation of Judaism isn't any of these things. These things gain their power, gain their stature, they gain their authenticity from the power of the bayit, and not the other way around.
And that's even the very first pasuk, right?
Nice.
Them leaving their bayit,
yes,
which will eventually be for 40 years of living, at least living without bayit, under the mercy of heavens, yes, completely exposed, no bayit.
I don't agree with that. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Bayit.
Correct. Basukot teishvu shivat yamim. They lived in a bayit. They lived in a bayit. You're thinking about. Don't think about the bayit as representing the protection, like permanence. No, it's a good question. A good question. What the idea of bayit, of house, represents. I know. I understand what you're saying. I didn't think about it that way. I was thinking of the bayit as celibate avot, celibayit. The bayit isn't the structure per se. Yes. Correct. That's how I saw it.
The first thing we say to a couple when they get married is we wish them a bayit and an eman.
Right. A bayit. Correct.
Not necessarily saying go buy a house. No,
Laura, the reason I disagree with what you're saying, but I understand what you're saying, is because the bayit itself doesn't protect in this case. In fact, the bayit is specifically porous. The bayit doesn't protect anyone. What protects? In this case, in this example, what offers the protection?
The blood of the
Korban Pesach protects. So the bayit itself is nothing. Without what it symbolizes, without the values of the bayit.
No. That's meaning that it's very clear that it's the bayit. Anyone who's inside the bayit is safe. Anyone who's outside the bayit is not safe. Now the blood is the same.
Very clear?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay. One thing that I wanted that, I don't know, is that I'm thinking about as you're reading this is the idea we talked about once that, sheep herding and represents sort of nomadic life.
Yes.
Right? And agriculture represents being
grounded. Yeah.
And I wonder how much the set is a subtle message to the Egyptians, like, we're on our way. We're about to start traveling. Right? Like, if the sheep is a... Right? And that's what was...
Wait, message to the Egyptians or message to the Jews?
Well, if the Egyptians are coming into their house seeing the sheep and being reviled by it, then I would say a message to the Egyptians.
Uh-huh.
Why is it so shocking to them?
Right.
It's shocking to them because what does this mean that they're tying up sheep? They're getting ready to...
It's interesting. I would just say, in the midrash that I have, all the midrash says is v'nafsham porachat me'alehem, their spirit like leaps out from them. That they're reviled in some way. It doesn't say why. So here he adds in why. He says because it was their God or whatever. I'd be fascinated to find other explanations for why the Egyptians, I mean, we know the classic one, that it's against their worship. But I'd be fascinated to find if we could find other interesting reasons or justifications for why. It's very, very fascinating. So that's five. Okay, let's read on. I want to read on because you'll see this becomes more and more pronounced, this idea of the bayit. Okay? Set tamim zachar ben shana yelachem. You have to take a pure seh ben shana. Anybody know how big a maximum year old sheep is? It's tiny. It's very small. Yeah, very tiny. Like smaller than your Theo. Yes. Yeah.
No, I think
they're
not.
Minimum of what?
Don't they come out big?
They come out bigger than Theo.
Really?
They're skinny, but they're taller.
I understand they were very small. I don't know. See, I know we never did it.
I would defer to her.
Do they have sheep on your place? They do goat milk, right? They do goat milk too.
Goats, but we started sheep, but we mostly have goats. You can hold them; they're small enough to hold. Min
hakvasim umin hayizim. You can have a sheep or a goat. How that when they're born? So for show and tell, you're opening one next week. Vaya lechem
lemishmeret. Do a class trip.
And we'll come to your bed.
If you promise a wine tasting, we do
and
a class trip.
And I'll go to Tammy's house.
Vaya lechem lemishmeret ad arba'asem lechodesh hazeh. You guard it, the mishmeret.
No, I'll go to
Shira's house. You do a mishmeret. You're guarding it until the 14th. So this animal is with you in the house until the 14th. Okay? V'shachatu oto kol kahal adat Yisrael ben ha'arbaim. We'll slaughter it. All kahal adat Yisrael in the afternoon. V'lachu min hadam. And you take from the blood. V'natnu al shtei ha'mezuzot v'al ha'mashkof al ha'batim asher yochlu otam v'hem. Okay? And you take it and you put on the shtei ha'mezuzot, the two doorposts, the two posts. Al ha'mashkof, the lintel. That's the right word. Okay? Al ha'batim. Asher yochlu otam behem. On the houses in which you will eat them.
In other words, not on every Jewish house, only on the houses where you will be congregating when the Malcolm of it goes.
Right.
Which tells me your shiur from last week about supernatural and this world and like this. And we do things connected to the Malcolm of it, but it's usually more like tefillah stuff, and this seems very. To do this physical thing to ward off the Malchamavet is strange.
Mm-hmm. It's only a place where you're living. Rashi says Al Habatim Asher Yuchalot Amehem. On Rashi in Pasuk Zayin. V'lo Al Mashkav Mizot Shebebeit Tevin Ubebeit Bakar. You don't do it on the shed or where your animals live. She'ein Darin B'Tocho. You only do it in a place where people live.
But that's not what the pasuk says.
Why? Al Habatim Asher
Yochlu Oto, where you will eat it, meaning the Korban Pesach, in it.
Okay.
In other words, because if they do a few families together, then it's going to be in one person's house.
So you say you wouldn't do it on the other house. You wouldn't necessarily. Right.
There would be no you're not wasting food. Your actions. It's only where your tacho is going to be. Which means that the blood is keeping the Malcolm of it away.
Interesting. Yeah, the blood is clearly keeping the Malcolm of it away. That's exactly what God says.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it says. But achlu et basar, I'm going to go a little quickly because we have to get to towards the end, you'll see. Achlu et basar ba'layla hazet tzli'esh umatzot al morim yochlu. You shall eat this meat on that night. It should be roasted on matzot and morim. Al tochlu mimenu na. You can't eat it raw. What's that called when they take the meat and eat it raw?
Sushi.
No, meat. There's a word for it. Tartar. Ubashel mevushal b'mayim. No, it can't be boiled. Ki insli esh rosho al kraav al kirbo. It must be totally roasted. In fact, the Mishnah says explicitly how you do it. That even its innards, the whole thing has to be on a spit. The whole thing long on a spit, roasted. Entire thing must be totally roasted. Why must it? There's no explicit reason. It's a chok. But what does roasting do? What do we know that according to halacha, roasting does?
It kashers.
Right. What is it kasher it from?
Blood.
It's fascinating, right?
It's already drained of its blood.
Why is it drained of its blood?
The blood.
Good. What did you do with the blood?
Put on the doorpost.
That's the only thing you did with the blood. The blood is to be painted on the doorpost. There is no other. There's no blood left.
No.
No what? No. Of course, there's blood left. There's the dama shechita, and then every time we take an animal, we slaughter the animal, and then there's blood in the meat. How do you get the blood out of the meat? So there's two ways:
salt
it and soak it,
or roast it.
On an open fire. So the roasting on the open fire, the whole thing, entirely an open thing, it seems to me the idea was there's the blood of the shechita, and then all the rest of the blood, nothing left. There's nothing left.
You kasher livers, you salt it, and then you do both.
Do you salt it? You have
to
salt
it?
I don't think you have to. You have to?
A little bit.
I don't think you have to.
You don't have to.
Sure. Rabbi Tal, we spoke about kasherim.
He said you have to, or that's a minhag?
Doesn't serve a kashering
purpose. Ah, okay, fine.
But you still do
right, roasting is.
You still do it.
It just reminds me of back in Detroit. We had a member who had one of the last privately owned slaughter, like smaller slaughterhouses in America, and he used to slaughter 10 cattle a day or something like that.
It's hard work.
Very hard work, and so that was the only time I ever had a fresh steak, mamish, And then he didn't slaughter it. He did it. He had a fire. He had a grill. And he did it on the grill.
Wow.
It was pretty good. It's delicious. Anyway. Okay. V'lototiru mimenu ad boker. V'anotami mimenu ad boker. Ba'esh tisrofu. You cannot leave any over. So it's a fascinating... I just want to... Rav Hirsch, you should look at Rav Hirsch on this point. It's a fascinating position that a person is in. You can't have anything left over. So what happens if there's only two people in our house?
You're supposed to join...
Right, right. So Rav Hirsch has a beautiful idea, beautiful, beautiful idea. He says, Jewish community, usually you would think in a Jewish community, the poor person needs the rich person. The rich guy has what he needs, and okay, the poor guy doesn't have enough, so he goes to the rich. God has built the Jewish community in such a way where it's not that the poor needs the rich. The rich guy needs the poor. You can't have too much. You say, oh, whatever's left over is left over. No, it's asur for you to leave it over. So you have to reach out to the poor person and say, would you mind coming and joining us? Would you do us the favor of joining in our household so we can fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach properly? And he says, based on this, it's a good idea. You can use it for your fundraising material. Right? There you go. There you go. Write it down. It's really a beautiful idea that in Judaism, God believes that the rich person needs the poor person. He gave to you in order to give of your wealth and to help those who are in need. And it's really not the other way around. And that's the ideal model. So I just threw it out there. You have something to use in your newsletter. Okay. V'kacha tochlu oto. This is how you shall eat it. Batnechem chagurim, na'alechem raglem, makalchem biadchem. Right? Your hands and your sticks in your hands. You're all girded and loined and ready to go. V'achatem oto mechipazon. Eat it quickly. Pesach u'lashem. And we have spoken about in years past the dichotomy. Because on the one hand, you're ready to go. But on the other hand, what do we really know? You're not allowed to leave until morning. So your shoes are on, you're ready to go, you're eating quickly. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's like the army. Hurry up and wait. Okay? Very nice. I will pass the land of Egypt on this night. I will give judgments to the gods of Egypt. The blood will be on the houses where you are. V'ra'iti et hadam, and I saw the blood. U'pasachti aleichem.
I will see the blood,
and I will skip over you. V'lo yebachem negef la'mashchit b'hakoti me'eretz Mitzrayim, and there will not be a negef to destroy you. It won't be a plague to destroy you, right, in the land of Egypt. So what will God see?
The blood.
Which blood?
The house.
Okay, it's interesting. So Rashi picks up immediately. Vayah adam hazam lechem la'ot ala batim asher atem sham. It will be a sign. Ve'ra'iti et hadam, and I will see the blood. So there's blood on the house, and then I will see the blood. But notice, by the way, it says again, pointing out the dam al habatim. The Torah points out specifically the blood on the houses. Okay. Where is the blood? Where on the door?
On the mashkof.
Where?
In the house.
Look at Rashi.
It's on the inside.
Vaya adam lachem leot. Lachem leot.
To you.
For you. Velo acherim leot. Right? You know, like when they have, when they're a hurricane and whatever, and they were going from house to house. So what do? When they went through a house and they saw the flooded house was empty, they would spray, on the outside as a sign. So that's the image that you get of Korban Pesach. Wrong. It was on the inside.
Hashem doesn't need it.
He doesn't need it.
It's for us.
Correct. So why are we painting the blood on our house? On the inside. What? About what? Correct. Hashem will come and protect us. But I'm just pointing out again, how do we show that? Isn't eating the Korban Pesach enough of the emunah? But the idea is that this emunah is expressed by painting on the doorway of the house. Okay? On the mezuzah, on the lintel of the doorway. And it's not a coincidence. I didn't even think about this until right now. The very end of the Torah, the very end of this pasuk, I mentioned one thing. This end of the parsha. Thank you. One second. Twice it says... Okay, one second. Yeah, it's fascinating. It doesn't do it. Vayala ot ayadcha utetavor beninecha. It's only these parshiyot are only in the tefillin. Where do they not appear? It's fascinating. Like I was thinking of the mizuzot. Hey, what do we do? Right, they're in the bite of the tefillin, but where are they not? They're not. Why aren't these parshiyot in the mezuzah? I don't know. To be discussed. Okay, back to our parsha. Rashi says, "V'ra'iti at adam," says the midrash. What dam? What dam are we referring to? So the midrash says we're all familiar with during Pesach night. We say, "Va'avor alayich v'arei otach mitbasesach b'damayich, v'amar lach b'damayich chayi, v'amar lach b'damayich chayi." Okay, and I will say to you, "In your blood you shall live." I will say to you, "In your blood you shall live." Which blood is it? Bedamai Chayi and Bedamai Chayi? Rina?
Mila,
right. The Midrash says, what is it? Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Bizchut Dam Brit Mila V'Dam Pesach. Okay. They had to do, all the Jewish people had to do Mila. Because remember, you can't, an Arel can't do a Korban Pesach. So all the Jews had to do Mila. When did they do the Mila?
Right before.
On Yud Nisan. Why did they need 4 days?
Three days.
You got to heal for 3 days, and then on the fourth
That's
day, then you can do the Korban Pesach.
That's it. What? Only 3 days.
Yeah, after that, you're fine. Okay? I mean, whatever.
What? We went to run and catch the sheep 3 days before.
They got the sheep on the 10th. They did the Mila on the 10th.
Same day,
right? 11th, 12th, 13th. On the 14th day, you can finally get out of bed, right? And that's the day that you're, you know what I'm saying?
And it's, that's why the sheep was next to the bed.
Is that why the sheep is there?
Keep an eye.
Because who else is going to watch it? I'll take that.
Running around and packing and throwing everything
out. The women's doing it right, of course. That we've talked about before as well. Right, we talked about that they didn't do packing. At least I believe they never did packing. Okay.
They did do some packing.
No packing.
They brought the toupim with them.
The women, what? Only the gold and silver they could take that night.
And the toupim with them, yeah.
Okay. A second. Now. Bahakoti, every time. Pasuk Yudalid. Pasuk Yudalid.
They didn't have to work for 3 days.
So this is what
work
I'm
was
thinking.
Done.
The work
was done.
Must have stopped.
Work was done. The Egyptians,
anyway.
the slavery
Egyptians
was done.
The Egyptians
are slaves. They can't do whatever they want with their time.
Remember it says the Egyptians were afraid of them by then.
The
Egyptians were the
Makot.
Right. The Egyptians were just. The Egyptians were just. They just didn't know what to do with themselves. Okay. Hayah hayom hazeh. Pasuk Yudalid. Yeah. What's the
matzah story?
That was last year's share.
What do you mean the matzah story?
They had so many days to prepare to go.
We talked about this before. I believe there's the preparation, but is there? Did they really believe that they were going to get out? Did they really believe? And the idea of the matzah is a symbol of both. They did the Korban Pesach, but Moshe said, we're leaving. If I told you, I've definitely spoken about before. If I've told you you were leaving, wouldn't you at least pack lunch?
Make your bread
the night before. And they didn't. They didn't. But they were also commanded to have matzot. That they were eating these bread on matzot marim.
They were eating didn't have to be matzah.
It had to be unleavened bread.
The ones that they ate with the Korban Pesach.
Yes, with the Korban Pesach. It says al matzot marim yochlu. Right, it says liesh al matzot marim yochlu. Okay. Shivat yamim matzot tochelu. Avayal hayom azel tikaron lachag v'tem matochag l'Hashem. This would be a remembrance of the oratechem forever. Chukat olam techaguhu. Some say, so by the way, it was unclear, there was a machloket. Should they always paint the blood? Every year. Well, we always did a Korban Pesach.
Yeah.
Always. Where are you going to do the Korban Pesach, by the way?
Just go to the
Tzanalis
in Nisan.
Yes, blood all over the place. Okay. Shivat yamim matzot tochelu. It's interesting how you would say it. So you have to eat matzot for 7 days. So what do we know about the halachot of Pesach for 7 days? What do we know?
No
chametz.
So you only have to eat matzah on the first.
No chametz where?
In your house.
If I was saying chametz, I would say, you're not allowed to eat chametz, you're not allowed to have chametz. How does the Torah qualify it? How does it quantify it? It says, Ach b'yom harishon, tashbitu se'or mibateichem. This is not coincidental. When you see this already, then it's like, whoa. Okay? So you must tashbitu, you must hashbit, to destroy, remove, se'or, leaven, from your home. Right, and this is what we do. What do we do the night before Pesach? Bior chametz. We do bdikat chametz. We check our house, the whole house. Which again represents this idea that there's something different about this chag. It's not just the Korban Pesach. It's not just the painting on the house is something that's a significant symbol in Pesach itself. Why? Ki kol ochel chametz v'nichotah nefesh ha'im Yisrael miyam rishon ha'shu yom ha'shu. Because you're not allowed to eat it. If you eat it, then you're going to get karet. So you could say, well, it's just a means. You have to check the house as a means because if you see it, then you're going to eat it. But to me, it's much more than that. It's a purification of the house. You know, you're eradicating, you're fumigating the house, the entire house, from chametz. Okay? 1 second. Ubayom harishon mikra kodesh ubayom eshvim mikra kodesh yalachem. I'm in Tetzayin. Kol melacha lo yaseh behem. You're not allowed to do any melacha on these days, on the first day and the seventh day. Ach asher yachel lechol nefesh, hu levado yaseh lechem. But you can cook. Yaseh lechol nefesh. That means you're allowed to cook because you need to eat. Ushmartem et ha-matzot. You shall guard the matzot. Matzah shmura. Ki be'ezom yom hazeh, otzeiti yetzivotechem eretz Mitzrayim. Because on this day I took your host out of Egypt. Ushmartem et yom hazeh ledavotechem chukat olam. Yudched, I know I'm going very fast. Bayerishon, on the first day, Ba'abas Yom Lachodesh Be'erev Tochlu Matzot, Ad Yom Ha'echad Be'asim Lachodesh Be'erev, until this 21st day. Pasuk Yud-Tet. Again, Shivat Yamim Se'or Lo Yimatzei Be'bateichem. Okay, I'm pointing out again, I'm highlighting this. Again, it's in your house. Why? Ki kol ochel machmetzah v'nifreta ha'nefesh ha'hi me'adai Yisrael ba'ger ba'azach ha'aretz, kol machmetzah lo tolochelu b'chom moshvoteichem tochlu matzot. Again, that's the commandment of matzah. Okay? And Moshe comes along and says tells them this again. So God says that to Moshe, and Moshe turns to the Jewish people. And he says to them, Mishchu.
Moshe told them all that God told them.
Because Moshe told them a little differently. Again, you should study this on your own. We're running out of time. Kulachem tzon lemishpachoteichem. Take tzon for your. What did God say? But not beit avot. Avot. Ulekachtem agudat ezov. Take a hyssop tree. Utvartem badam asher basaf. You shall dip it in the dam, in the hasaf, in the little bucket. Vigatem ala mashkof al shtei amezuzot min adam asher basaf. Vaatem and you lo teitzu ish mi petach beito ad boker. Don't leave the petach beito. Stay in your homes. Yeah.
Even if you're outside and you see the blood and it's an oat, I know the blood might be inside, but it might be outside too.
Okay. So, maybe a little spill. Okay.
You're still destroyed. It's actually the house.
One second. I have to find the Midrash because the Midrash says otherwise. One second.
The Midrash says it's not the house.
We see it also in stone, right? You're inside the house, you're safe. You're outside the house, you're destroyed.
There's always a sense that, like, when you're inside the house, there's an angry mob outside the house. They had to leave the whole city. An angry angel of death outside. They had to leave the whole city in order to relieve the slaves. I have to find you in the Midrash. I'm going to find it to you afterwards. The Midrash says that if there was a Mitzri, one second, in his house, in a Jewish house, he died too. The Midrash does say, I'll find it for you. But I'll find it for you after the shiur's over. But I saw a Midrash that says that. An Egyptian, what if you have an Egyptian bechor in a Jewish house?
His servant?
Why would you have an Egyptian? Don't ask why, I'm sure there was. What if there was an Egyptian firstborn in a Jewish house?
He'd be saved.
Well, because buying, as you said, it's not just about the
household.
Oh, I can't find it now. I'll find it. I'll find it for you. Okay. Jew outside dead. Jew outside was not safe if he was the firstborn. Right. An Egyptian inside?
Probably also could be killed.
Ah, okay. So that's against your whole theory.
No, it's not against the whole theory. Because the household protects the Jews in the household. The house protects the...
So you have... It's both. It's the household and the house. If they're both, there's like a Venn diagram. In the house, you know, or whatever. Okay. One second.
So I just want to.
What?
Are Egyptians in total darkness?
The darkness was ended. The darkness had ended. Okay? So I just want to point out, I'll just point out a couple more examples. We don't have time to finish. Okay? So skip on Chav Zayin. Skip to Chav Zayin. Ve'amartem, you shall say. When your children say, Vayak Chavav, Ki Amru Alechem Benechem, Ma Abodaz Alechem, what are you doing? Ve'amartem, you will say, Zevach Pesach Hu Lashem. It's an offering to God. Asher Pasach Al. Batei b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim. God skipped over the houses. Menakpo et mitzrayim ve'et bateinu hitzio. He didn't save us. He didn't say ve'et otanu hitzio. Ve'et bateinu hitzio. Everything is conjugated in the form of houses. God didn't save the Jewish people. God saved the houses of the Jewish people. And that's exactly what happened. Okay? Okay? Pasuk Lamed. Skipping a little, because I'm really out of time. Vayakam paro laila hu v'chol avada v'chol mitzrayim. They all got up. V'athi tze'aka gdola b'mitzrayim ki ein bayit asher en sham me. This pasuk doesn't make any sense. There was no house asher en sham me, that there wasn't somebody died. So we're all stuck with the question. What's the obvious question?
What's with the house?
Well, logically, household. Does every house have a firstborn?
No.
So you have two possible answers. What?
Household.
Look at Rashi. Ein bayit asher en sham me. Look at Rashi. Yesh sham b'chor meit. If there was a b'chor, he died. Ein sham b'chor. Gadol shebebayit karui b'chor. Yeah, really? Right. It was supposed to be the firstborn. What the heck? You know what I'm saying? No.
He was born before all the other males in the house.
What?
But that also, that's what happens naturally when the, speaking a little bit from experience, when the oldest child leaves the house, then the next child takes over something.
He's not the b'chor, but you would think it's makad b'choro. What the heck? Right. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's just, you never thought that. Isn't it makad b'choro? No, it's the makad mitzrayim. Makad, not makad mitzrayim. Batei Mitzrayim. It's the houses of Mitzrayim. We're just going to skip very end. Look at skip to Mem Gimel. I'm just showing you again that this theme goes through the entire parasha. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Zod Chukat HaPesach. This is the rule of Pesach. Kol ben lechar lo yochavo. No non-Jews. V'chol eved ish miknat kesef umalta oto az yochavo. Okay? If you have a servant, he wants to eat, he has to have a brit milah. Toshav is achir lo yochabo. No strangers, no non-Jews, no ger toshav, only Jews. Bebayid echad yeyachel. He must be eaten in one house. Lo totzi min habayid min habasar chutza. The meat, once it enters the house, you have to eat it in the house. This is not a chag of just having korban pesach. It's not a chag. It's a chag of bayit. And as we know, Chazal, the sages, they enshrine this in our customs. And even though we don't have the Korban Pesach, there is no Chag of Bayit, of home, like Pesach. There is no. Leil Pesach is the Laila when we gather together around the table and we reestablish this notion of household, of family. Okay? And in fact, it's called Leil, we call it a Leil Shimurim. What are one of the things that we say about it is a Leil Shimurim? It's a guarded, what do we say? What's our, like, this Minhag that you've taught forever and ever? What
to say Shema.
Well, not say Shema? Never heard of it. You don't lock the doors of the house. Right? The doors of the house. Why? Because the house is the protection. Now, how many people actually didn't lock their doors? Who doesn't lock their doors? Here, we could get away with it. Whatever.
Excuse me.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Okay. No, we have Shmira. It's good. Anyway, but the idea is that the house is the protection on this night. The house defines us. And I think it comes through just so strongly. The idea, like how many, maybe 15 or 20 times we've seen this notion of bayit. It's the bayit when they first took it. It's the beit avot when they had it. It's the bayit when it comes to the mashkof, the physical symbol of the bayit. Right? It's the beit avot. The Egyptians were struck as a bayit, and then we celebrate as a bayit later on. Giving the, now it's not just credence, it solidifies the notion that the very first thing that the Ribbono Shel Olam does in the formation, everything we do is then Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. What's the first thing we did in Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim? Right, the foundation of our faith has to come first and foremost in the foundation of the bayit, of the house, of the home. And while the men are of course lying around writhing in pain, the women are getting the bayit ready. But that's a it's another
discussion
issue.
Discussion for another time.
But this idea, as it comes out. Again, I'd be fascinated to see a broader discussion of it, but I just noticed it over and over and over again, and as you see in the Midrashim, how powerful this is. It should give us, how should we say this, food for thought. Because while we understand this, and it's intuitive to us, it's not intuitive in the religious culture in which we live that the bayit plays such a fundamental role. And I'm not talking, again, it's that discussion of men and women is not the discussion we're having here. It's a discussion of the structure of the bayit, the family structure, and the critical and the importance of its nature. And I think that's something that we don't promote enough. This notion of the value of the bayit and how critical it is for us as a people. We live in a time where external things are important, where symbols are important, where institutions are important. But the bayit is not important, both for the man and for the women and for the men. Wouldn't I say, like, we were talking about it, that, you know, that men are very much distracted from the notion of the house nowadays. We put in so many hours of work, and we're out so much, and we don't invest enough time in this notion of the bayit. And it's the founding stone, it's the formation of our people. And each year we go back and we renew, but what about all that time in between? Okay, what's up?